Welcome back to After Hours. It is my pleasure to have in here Joseph G. Peterson. I use that, Joe, because
that's my moniker.
You look it up, because if you just put Joseph Peterson in Google, as people do, you get like 1,000 Joseph
Peterson. Yeah, or Joe Peterson.
Yeah, Joe. I have I read this book, Memorandum from the Iowa Cloud Appreciation Society, some time ago. To see if I wanted or could or was impressed enough to write a jacket quote. And I did, because I was impressed. I wrote, for years now, Joe Peterson has been one of our, Chicago's, and the planet's most inventive and intriguing writers. In his latest, he soars even higher. It's a cloud kind of thing.
Yeah.
Providing a captivating tale filled with narrative power, artful observations, and unforgettable characters. That is so true of this book. Joe has been on the show before, I think specifically to talk about a novel called Gideon's Confession, and then another fabulous book called 99 Bottles. What number book is this of yours?
This is number 9. And by the way, thank you for that great blurb.
I hope it sells.
I hope it helps with sales. It's going to make it a bestseller for sure.
Well, we were just talking before we came on the air about the difficulties in the book publishing business. Now, you're a child of Wheeling.
Wheeling, Illinois, the village of Wheeling,
You're a child of the University of Chicago.
Yes, I am.
You,
it was a rough birth, but yes, I am. It's a rough birth at the University of Chicago, but I am a child.
You survived.
Yes.
You survived. You ran a zine for a long time. I don't think we've ever talked about
we
that.
We haven't. I ran a zine called Storyhead Magazine with a great artist and a great, just a great person, Mike Brehm. We ran it probably in the early 1990s.
Why did you do that?
Mike Brehm and I, at the time, Mike is an artist, a really phenomenal artist. And by the way, you can look him up, Mike Brehm, on the internet. He's an artist, and you should be able to find his work.
Spell it for me.
B-R-E-H-M, Mike Brehm.
Great art. You weren't students then? You were out of school?
No, we were working both at the University of Chicago Press. He was a book designer, and his passion was art. I did inventory management and that sort of thing at the University of Chicago Press, and my passion was writing. And we talked a lot. We talked a lot about how hard it was to send a story to the New Yorker. What happens?
Yeah, good luck. Yeah.
So a new technology just happened. Mike, being in design and book production, really had his ear to the ground, and he heard about this new technology. It was called the DocuTech print technology, and it was very early digital printing. So what you could do is you could take a file, put on a chip, or on some sort of digital delivery system, put it into this big, gigantic copy machine, and it would spit out copies of your book. It would even staple them.
Wow!
So for us, it was like, why are we sending stuff to New Yorker?
Yeah, why are we waiting for rejection slips? Yeah.
Why are we waiting for rejection slips? Let's just try our own magazine. And
you ran it for a while, didn't you?
We had 10 issues. I'll tell you a little bit about the history of it. The concept of the magazine was to feature both writers who wrote stories and artists who did artwork. And our whole goal was to just have this magazine where it was featuring artists, painters, cartoonists, this sort of thing, and short story writers.
And photographers, too, or no?
We had photographers.
Wow.
And then we would have small magazines within the magazine. So people would submit small microzines, and we'd staple them into our magazine.
How interesting.
We had 10 issues, and what was really neat about it, it was kind of like a...
Did you have subscribers? We had
subscribers.
Distribute these to strangers?
So here's the thing. We found out about this technology, DocuTech, and we created this magazine called Storyhead. Little did we know that concurrent with our discovery, everybody else was making the same discovery. And thus began what was known as the zine revolution.
Yeah.
So we were really part of the zine revolution. We float into the zine revolution. We didn't know there was a revolution. We just, we were doing it, everybody else was doing it, and later it was called a revolution. There was a guy named, I believe his name was R. Seth Friedman.
Mm-hmm.
He ran a magazine called Factsheet 5. Factsheet 5 was this basically this large magazine that you could buy, and it had a listing with brief reviews of all the zines that were submitted to him. So the neat thing about Factsheet 5, it became the organizing principle around the zine revolution. So that it's real, like anyone who wants to study zines in the 1990s has to start by looking at Factsheet 5, which
is interesting.
And so we would send our magazine.
What happened to the revolution?
I don't know what happened. Maybe what happened was, you know what happened? I know exactly what happened now that you ask. What happened was the internet started to evolve.
Yeah, yeah.
And what took over, what became sort of the new form of the zine, were blogs.
Yeah.
Remember, everybody had their own
everybody,
blog.
Everybody, I didn't, but yeah. Everybody, you yeah. didn't, but everybody
I didn't either.
Did.
But so blogs took over, and I think zines sort, and then Amazon came on, and
yeah.
just, you know, what was a moment in time, you know,
But you
niche,
were there, man. You were part
a niche,
of the revolution.
A niche technology launched this revolution. It was a really exciting time, and there were so many great zines. One that people still might know about was a zine called Comic Bus.
Oh, right. I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get into Joseph G. Peterson's novel writing. This is just a great book, Joe. Memorandum from the Iowa Cloud Appreciation Society. It mostly takes place in an airport, you know, without George Clooney. That's
yeah.
one thing
yeah.
I think
yeah.
of. We'll be back after a short little break. I have not read all of Joe Peterson's books, but I have read Gideon's Confession, 99 Bottles, and his latest memorandum from the Iowa Cloud Appreciation Society. I do think he is one of Chicago's best, most stylish, and thoughtful writers. You have a website?
Yeah.
What is it?
You'll have to look it up. It's not easy. It's joseph.g.petersonwick. site or something like that. You'll
look
find
up
it.
Joseph G. Peterson. You'll find it, and you'll find stuff about this. What is the birth? Tell me about, because I read it, and I always am curious about how novels are born. What was the birth of this fantastic novel? Were you sitting in an airport one day and said, "Why, you know, there's something?"
No, I wasn't sitting in the airport. And how novels get birthed, even in my own life, is a mystery. Usually, it starts with a sentence or two, you know,
really?
and a cadence or something, and you're like, "There's an interesting sound to this language that sounds that there may be some." Prospect here following this train of thought. And what I did for some reason in this particular story, the opening, like I may have written a paragraph that just occurred to me about a guy sitting in an airport.
Yeah.
And I started studying pictures of airports.
Huh.
And, you know, there's so much beautiful photography. It's amazing how much beautiful photography there is of airports. And there was something about looking at the photography of airports became very provocative to me. And I think one of the things I was doing when I was trying to write it, because it's written in small chapters,
yeah,
was really to have the chapters feel accidental and spontaneous, like things that would happen that would just be completely spontaneous and accidental, as they happen in real life. And I remember just being open to that kind of stuff.
There are, and I told Joe before I could pick a paragraph on almost any page to read, but I just want to give you a sense of his style and his mind. A paragraph can give you a sense of your mind.
Yeah.
This is chapter 21. he couldn't stand in a line these days without thinking from time to time of cattle at the slaughterhouse. And whenever he thought of cattle being rounded up for the final cull, he was so saddened by the dire inhumanity of human toward beast, he vowed to give up meat forever. On the other hand, the great machinery of animal death would occur with or without his participation, and as long as he had cravings for hamburgers and steaks, it didn't seem likely he would ever forego meat. That is an incredibly observant and fun paragraph, and it really captures this guy, yeah. I think.
Yes,
do you agree?
It does. Yes, it does.
How hard is it? Does a paragraph like that, Joe, flow out of you, or do you rework? I'm trying to get at what your method is. Do you have a standard time for writing? Do you sit down every day? What is your writing routine?
When people ask me that question, I compare myself to guys who like to go to the driving range and hit a bucket of balls. Yeah. I'm not a golfer. I've never hit a bucket of balls at the driving range, but they go, they knock out a couple of balls, blow off a little steam, adjust their mind, and go get on with the rest of their day. For me, it's just really, I write a sentence here, a sentence there. I just do it throughout the day. It's just my way of basically...
You have a full-time job.
I have a full-time
what
job.
What is your job?
I work at the University of Chicago Press. I do a lot of data analysis and inventory management and a lot of the logistics components at the back end of our business. So that's a very mathematical part of my day-to-day job. But I always say I do math by day and in sentences at the other parts of the day.
You have two kids.
I have two kids.
And a wife.
And a beautiful wife, two beautiful daughters. One's in college, one just graduated college. And
wow, congratulations.
But my writing career, and this is the thing that's really, I think, was always important to me. I always wanted to write books and dedicate myself to writing. That's who I am. That's what I am, a writer.
Right.
But I never wanted to be caught writing. So a lot of my writing, occurs in the extreme margins of the day, either at 5:30 when I wake up till 6 when I serve breakfast, or after 10 at night for 15 or 20 minutes.
Interesting.
But this idea of, I got to take a sabbatical for 2 months to write, to me is an inconceivable way to go about writing books. To me, I just want to, it's just really, for me, it's just hitting a bucket of balls. It's not about anything more than that.
Interesting, but you become relatively prolific.
Yeah, this is number 9.
I know.
It's crazy.
I know.
It's worked for me. And so, this idea, I got to write 1,500 words. That's never been the point. For me, it's more like, let's take a shot and see where the sentence goes today.
For instance, in a book like a Memorandum from the Iowa Cloud Appreciation Society, it is basically a guy at the airport takes some trips through his own mind and describe it. Say I'm a movie producer, Joe Peterson.
Yeah.
Give me the pitch.
I'm going to give you the $1 million pitch.
Yes.
It's about a guy who sits in an airport, goes to the bathroom, and has a bowl of soup, That's the whole
book. And watches guys eat Big Macs.
And watches guys eat Big Macs. And, it's like he does actually, for me, that is so many of my books and my characters, 99 Bottles, for instance.
Oh, yeah, totally.
The characters in that did never leave the bar. So a tremendous amount of stasis settles on my characters. Mm-hmm. They're stuck in life. They're stuck in a place. They can't move. This sort of stasis, this gravitational stuckness. A lot of my books think about this concept of the opposite of success in the American dream. They think about failure.
Yep.
loss. The other side of it, and for people who are not on the winning side, they're on the stuck side. And so a lot of my characters tend to be stuck.
Well, the lead character in Memorandum from the Iowa Cloud Appreciation Society is a relatively successful traveling salesman.
Yeah.
Who spends a lot of time in airports. Take a break, but I'm going to read this to you before. Here's another one of the paragraphs, just to give you a sense of, and I think Joe is one of the finest writers writing these days, even if his method of writing is kind of weird. Most people go, what? You do a sentence here or there. Here's the beginning of chapter 27. It was strange. Moore was happy all of a sudden. He felt joy in his heart. A smile was breaking across his face. It amazed him how accidentally and suddenly joy could grab hold of him. It was always around a woman, he thought. Not any kind of woman. Usually it was with a woman who was more attractive than he thought he deserved, but who nonetheless seemed keenly interested in him. He wondered if it could pass as his definition of happiness. That's a great sentence, and it is also a great, great observation. We will take a break and continue on with Joe for a few more minutes after you hear some news. As I said, my quote on the back of this is, for years now, Joe Peterson has been one of our, Chicago's and the planet's, most inventive and intriguing writers. In his latest, he soars even higher, providing a captivating tale filled with narrative power, artful observations, which you just heard, and unforgettable characters. Will be back after the news. Welcome back. I have a couple more minutes with Joe Peterson. His latest book, Memorandum from the Iowa Cloud Appreciation Society, is not a long book, and it's very short chapters, I mean, which I think is the new thing these days. All of his books are terrific books. You can look him up on Google or whatever.
Amazon.
Amazon, Google. Joseph G. Peterson, S-O-N, at the end of it. You have some, the book promotion business, we've been, you should hear what we're saying off the air, can be nightmarish, but you've got a couple things coming up, don't you?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. I have, actually my book launch is going to be at the Seminary Co-op Bookstore.
Great bookstore.
On December 2nd, which is a Friday at 6 p.m. You can go to the University of Chicago calendar website and learn more about that. I also am having a book release party at Jimmy's Woodlawn Tap in Hyde Park, 57th.
Great tavern.
57th and Woodlawn on Saturday, December 3rd, between 3 and 5 in the afternoon. I'll be reading my book with my friend Giono Cromley, who will be reading from his book as well.
What's his book? Novel?
Yes, his book's a novel.
Good.
Yeah.
Do you like, I mean, you're such a personable guy. Do you like going out and talking about your own work?
I like talking with you. What are you talking about?
Yeah, everybody likes talking to me. Yeah, you're like, wow, Rick, read some more.
That's right.
Now, if you people out there heard me read those two paragraphs, I think that would be an interesting, you should have been hooked.
And if not, we're fishing in the wrong hole, I guess.
Yeah, that is true. That is really true. It's about a traveling salesman who makes observations about life and meets characters. You've created something good here.
Yeah.
Now what? Now you'll go home after this and write a sentence that'll be part of your next.
That's exactly right.
That'll be part of his next novel. That's how you work, isn't it?
Yeah. I just tinker away, and you know, before you know it, there's a book there. It's like, really? There's another book?
Do you at one point, do you keep this in a pile? Or I know I'm getting really, you know.
What do you mean, pile?
Like a pile of papers, or?
I write on my computer.
Okay.
And I always have a variety of different projects working. In different voices, different, you know, first person, second person, third person, you know, different projects. So I'm always, like, working on this project, work.
What do you read?
I'm you know, there are great readers, and I'm guessing you're one of them. You know, just get into a book, read it cover to cover. Yeah. I'm kind of constantly reading. You know, I work in academic publishing,
sure.
So I'm open to reading academic.
Yes, you do work in academic publishing, but the University of Chicago Press is famous for publishing A River Runs Through It.
By Norman McLean.
Remarkable book.
Yeah, and Young Men in Fire, also remarkable.
Right. He was something. He was something. Do you have authors who have influenced you?
You know, you asked me that last time I was on the show, and I was like, man,
That should have given you a long time to come up with an answer.
I was shocked I couldn't come up with anything. But I'll be completely brutally honest with your audience.
Sure.
Saul Bellow.
Good for you.
I mean, when I was a kid, I was working in an aluminum mill, and I was reading Henderson the Rain King.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gone 1 year to Iowa State, dropped out of, I had decided I wasn't going to go back to Iowa State. I applied to the University of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I got the aluminum job by telling a guy who was hiring me, by the way, I applied to the University of Chicago, so that must mean something to... And while I was there, I was reading Henderson, The Rain King, and I'm like, my God, you know... If a guy like Saul Bellow had to go to the University of Chicago to write a book like this, that's exactly where I want to go.
Good for you.
And I was happy I got in.
He was quite a guy. You know, it's interesting. We can do this some other time, but
yeah.
It's interesting how Bellow seems to have gone out of favor. You don't hear.
No. Yeah.
You don't hear. He's one of my favorite writers.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. What it is about Saul Bellow for me, because I, as you pointed out, I make sentences. Like, that's what I do.
Yeah.
I almost think that's what I do. I make sentences.
Mm-hmm.
One after the other. My dad was a bricklayer. He laid one brick after another, and I kind of follow in his mm-hmm. footpaths, but I lay one sentence after another.
Mm.
But Bellow, for me, it's just like his sentences. You know, this book, Ravelstein, one of his last ones.
Sure.
So, the opening pages of Ravelstein, the prose is so brilliant. The way he settles into the story in this sort of backwards way. The prose opening paragraphs are so brilliant of Ravelstein that when I read it, and I was talking to a friend of mine, we read it together. My friend said, that's so good, he should win the Nobel Prize a second time just for that set of sentences. I mean, for me, I don't know if he was, as a storyteller, maybe a little diffuse, and so maybe didn't capture people who want to read stories, but for anyone passionate about English language.
I agree. I think that is true also of your book, Joe Peterson, Memorandum from the Iowa Cloud Appreciation Society. Read this first, then go back and read the other 8 that he has written. It is great to see you, Joe.
Thank you so much, Rick. Thanks for everything.
And it's great to read you, too. We'll